Welcome back to the MLL podcast. We are heading into the All-Star game between the MLL All-Stars and Team USA this week. But first, we're going to start out with some previews. And I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Chris Rosenthal. Chris, what's up?
What's going on, Kyle?
You know, just getting down to the business end of it. We're gonna fire through this, man. We're gonna go. We've had some long pods, but we're gonna have another long one because some stuff happened. But let's just get rolling. We're gonna start with the Week 9 recap. First game: Florida 21, Charlotte 17. You know, the launch flipped the script from last week's historically bad loss to the Outlaws. Dropped a 21 spot on Charlotte, who I feel once again reached their cap for goals. Chris, what'd you make of this one?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's kind of what we were discussing last time with the Hounds. You know, they're going to be a team that was going to win games by scoring, you know, around 16 or 17 goals, I think it said. And, you know, if you're going to give up 21, this is the kind of thing that happens. You know, I have to wonder how much Charlie Cipriano's absence played into it, because I think we had seen earlier on in the season some times watching the Hounds where you thought, you know, him standing on his head was kind of the explanation behind some of the early season success. And it looks like maybe their defensive efforts haven't caught up necessarily to the level of play he had been demonstrating earlier. I mean, I think the big story is Florida, you know, regardless of who's in cage for Charlotte, just Florida. I mean, that kind of offensive explosion, 16 points between two attackmen. You kind of wonder, they were, you know, towards the bottom of the standings heading into this weekend. Do you think they can kind of, you know, use this to carry them forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think Florida's a team that relies on their attack to power their entire team's energy. You know, I think the difference between this year's Florida squad and last year's Florida squad really is the emergence of Malloy and the emergence of Kieran McArdle. As guys that can put up, you know, 8 points each with a fair amount of regularity. And we saw that here. You know, you mentioned them combined for 16 points. That's crazy. But it's also kind of expected if Florida's going to win. Last year's Florida team was, you know, more built on scrappy, gritty, between the 2-point line kind of play. And this year's squad has elements of that. But I think they're at their best when they're attacking early in the shot clock. They're getting team, you know, they're taking advantage of broken situations or uneven situations or matchups. And that's when Florida's good. When Florida is not good, it's because they can't get those matchups. They can't beat another team with their speed. A couple of the faster teams in the league that they have struggled with, you know, I'm thinking about Dallas specifically and also the Outlaws. So I think that when Florida can exploit their matchups in the six and also in uneven situations, that's how they win. I think with the Hounds, it's interesting with the Hounds because this game in particular was, you know, a wild game in the fourth quarter. You know, 13 total goals scored by both teams. Charlotte wasn't going away necessarily, but it just took way too long for them to mount a concerted effort. And by the time they did it, they were matchy-matchy with the goals,
right,
instead of actually putting together a run. And that's what they needed. I think Charlotte just has problems scoring goals in like groups of 4, 5, and 6. I think they're great at putting together 2 and 3 goal runs and like trying to have their defense do the rest. But I don't think that they're ready for that, especially as you said, with Sip out of the cage.
Yeah. I think, you know, they started out so strong and now they're kind of sliding and trying to grasp their footing back, but I'm not sure if they're going to get it.
All right, we're going to move on to the next game. Dallas Rattlers 16, Atlanta Blaze 14. You know, the Rattlers never trailed. I think the scoreline makes this look closer than it was. And now, you know, Dallas is at top of the standings with 8 wins. I feel like that's enough to guarantee them a playoff berth at this point, just because they're so hard to beat. And I'm going to say that it does, because I think math is overrated. But sure. Chris, what are your thoughts on the Rattlers and the Blaze after this game?
Rattlers, I'm going to go out on the limb there as well, and I'm going to say yes, we will see them in the postseason this year. Hot take for you right there.
Quite hot.
Yes, absolutely. So the thing I really liked about Dallas in this game, obviously you got your attack that looked very solid. You know, you got Wolf doing what he does. You got Ty Thompson, who was actually kind of quiet by Thompson standards this year.
But still, a sick goal. Sick goal. Diving backhanded goal. Right when you thought he was, like, not going to get it, people were going to start mumbling about the All-Star, he was like, nah, I'm going to put in the best goal of the game. And he did. And that's when I tweeted,
don't forget about me.
Hashtag put Ty Thompson in the All-Star game.com/ right now. Because they should.
Absolutely.
But yes. Sorry I interrupted you. Please continue.
No problem at all. But the especially big thing about Dallas in this game, I thought, was their midfield. You know what you're getting from the other guys. But if you have midfield production like they're putting up in this game, that's, I think, what makes them a really, really huge problem to deal with. You know, Ned Crotty was playing. I don't know. It's tough to describe Ned Crotty because I think he kind of comes with an expectation that is in and of itself kind of mysterious. Like, you know, is Ned Crotty the inverting Ned Crotty from years and years ago? Is Ned Crotty going to run out of the box? You know, like a Mikey Schlosser type. He just kind of pops up every year and is something different than he was the year before.
Yeah, he's whatever the team needs him to be.
Right. He just kind of adopts a different sort of identity whenever he suits up. So, again, he worked out really well. John Rannigan was a nightmare for anybody trying to cover him. And when you have that kind of, you know, multi-dimensional team, you know, that isn't just looking to beat you with the attack and no backup plan or midfield and no backup plan, that's what makes them especially dangerous. Like teams like them and, you know, Denver, we've talked a lot about their, you know, six different weapons. It's very tough to defeat that kind of squad.
What did you think of Atlanta? I mean, they put in a little bit of an effort late. Atlanta not delivering in the crunch.
Yeah. I'm curious as to what they feel like their ideal goalie situation is going forward. Chris Madelon got the start and gave up seven when he was in there for the first quarter. And then you put Adam Gettleman in, who I thought had some just really, really remarkable stops that kind of, you know, fueled the Blaze sort of comeback rally to make things much closer. You know, I liked their midfield play a little bit more. Sergio Salcedo commands a lot of attention. So I think what you bring in Salcedo to do is something he did very well. Christian Cuccinello was an interesting addition there. They didn't have Tommy Palisek. They had Cuccinello back there. And it looked like they ran a lot of offenses kind of geared towards using him and Rice together behind goal line extended. Interesting wrinkle. And, I think there's something there for the future. You know, it's a loss, but I don't feel like it's a loss where, you know, you go in the locker room and you break all your stuff and, you know, you try to trade everybody for pennies on the dollar.
Like another team might do. We'll get to that later. One of the guys that surprises me and has surprised me kind of all season is Danny Ipe. And if you look at the stat sheet, it doesn't even look like he touches the ball. You know, he's got one assist here. Apparently he didn't shoot at all. I think that stat is wrong. I'm pretty sure he took a couple shots. But he's actually a pretty integral part of what they're doing on offense as the hinge guy, you know, and like that's how guys like Jeremy Boltis kind of got started, where, you know, when he was on the Nationals back in the day. Wow, that was to get back in the time machine for that one, guys. Hamilton National reference. He would catch and distribute. He would be on the side and he would be the guy catching the ball from the guy dodging the alley, and he would move it to X or he would move it back to the top. And that was his role for a while, and it's almost like you have to earn your way back doing the little things. And I think Ipe actually really does a fantastic job of those little things. But I think Atlanta's one of those teams that relies so much on their like star power. Like they rely so much on Rice to create everything, and everyone in the league knows that now. So they're just going to send the house if they see Rice turn the corner, they're going to send the double no matter what. So what teams are doing now is they're sliding over quick and also covering the crease so he doesn't get that and the adjacent side where he drives. So he usually drives up to his right hand and either looks for his turnaround shot or a distribute. And teams are just shutting off that side. So what he has to do is turn all the way back and then move the ball back there. And it's like you can see it's frustrating for him because teams are specifically doing everything to stop him. And I think that's why Atlanta tried to do the two-man stuff with Cuccinello. But Cuccinello had a couple plays where, like, all he had to do was tap it in. And he tried to do, like, a dive shot or he tried to hit the top corner. I don't know. I think this team just needs a whole lot of simplicity injected into them for them to be more as effective as they could be because they're almost, like, over-coached. They're like they have their schemes are too complex, you know, and you said the splitting time with the goalie thing that's we've seen it work once in the MLL, right? We saw it work again, get back in the Wayback Machine with that Nationals team in 2009. You know, we saw that work. I don't think it's worked since then. Can you recall a team that has been able to split halves and not have a consistent number one goaltender?
No, I mean, I don't feel like it's an ideal situation.
No, it's definitely not. And I think that Gittleman looks better, right? But I think that Matalon is more consistent in the saves that he can make. But I do think that Gittleman has, you know, very tangible strengths and weaknesses in the cage. Like, he's very good stick side. He's very good kind of smothering shots. But he's not as great off stick. He allows 2-point goals. He gets screened, you know, and I think those are two things that Matalon is actually pretty good at, but Matalon's shot stopping ability overall isn't as high as Gittleman's. So it's caught, you're caught in a bad situation if you're trying to pick one of those goalies, right? I think because Matalon has clearly been the breakout guy because you've gone to him, but he's also had good games and bad games, you know, no saves and allowing 7 goals. It's tough. It's tough to keep that guy in. Like, that's understandable. But he also has been starting and not starting with Gittleman for a while now. So pick a guy, go with that guy, at least give him a half. You know, I understand if you pull a guy with 7 goals straight, like, that makes sense. But I don't know, on the other hand, what they're doing there. You know, I think the defense played a little better, you know, because against Dallas, like, Dallas scores most of their points, you know, just by outrunning you. And by with sheer talent, right? They're not manufacturing set piece step downs. They're taking advantage of you screwing up, and they are amazing at scoring when you screw up. I don't think any team in the league is better. In fact, I know no other team in the league is better at adjusting for, oh no, our sub's a little late, or oh no, we over rotated. No, you can't do that against Dallas because you'll get killed. They'll score every time. So I think it's a bad matchup for them, but I don't know. Atlanta's one of those weird teams where, like, I do see what they're doing. I do acknowledge they have a lot of talent, but it's not as much talent as Dallas. And if you try to go out talent Dallas, you're going to lose. And that's what happened.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is one of those games where it was just kind of like, well, you know, what'd you expect? You know, at this point, you kind of assumed that Dallas was going to beat Atlanta. Shout out Connor Kelly, got to say 4-goal game for him. And, you know, we just have to see if this is more of the Connor Kelly that we're going to see going forward, or if this is kind of a, you know, hey, don't forget, I was really good at Maryland kind of Connor Kelly, you know. So increased production out of the midfield is something that we've been stressing forever with Atlanta. We just have to see if they can do it consistently.
Yeah, bringing in different guys is it's tough to work them in, but Connor Kelly definitely looked comfortable. Our next game. The Denver Outlaws 17, the Ohio Machine 13. Another Chris Cloutier performance that is so incredible that it doesn't make sense. Ohio is still not mathematically eliminated at 2-7, but I think we know how I feel about math. Chris, how big was this game for Denver, and how bad was this result for Ohio?
So it was bad for Ohio. I will go ahead and assume. Are you ready for another hot take?
I'm always ready for hot takes.
Get ready. Get ready. Make some room. I'm going to assume they're not going to repeat this year.
I don't have eyebrows from how hot that take is.
Let that marinate for a second.
Wow.
Yeah. Denver, I mean, yeah, this is one of those games that they just kind of, this is like yard work, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, if you're going to be a homeowner, you got some stuff you have to take care of, and this is one of the things they have to take care of, you know? Yeah, they should win by, you know, 17 goals. Yes, all of this is stuff that is expected, and they delivered.
Yeah.
Ohio kind of had a lot of differences going on. You know, it was Marcus Holman down there with two attackmen. You know, with Mangan and Matthews, you know, he's got to figure out on the fly what he's going to do with them, what they're going to do with him. You know, not an ideal situation for the machine, but, you know, Denver took advantage of all sorts of things like that. And like you said, another insane performance from that rookie there, Chris Cloutier. And, you know, I mean, just, yeah, this is what Denver is expected to do, and this is what they should do, right?
Yeah, and they didn't do it. In aside from Cloutier, I don't think they did it in their spectacular style. I think they went to fourth gear and were like, we're good in fourth. We don't need to shift up. And they just, right. They got there. They stayed there. They were steady the whole game. They didn't go crazy. They had a couple runs that were really nice that put the game out of reach. But by and large, I mean, if Denver can put on this kind of performance and beat other teams kind of lower in the standings, they're good. But they do need to remember that they have to put in the whole shift against, you know, someone like Dallas or someone like, you know, even Atlanta, they got to put in a full shift, you know. But I think that for Ohio, I don't know. It's weird. You know, they have those documentaries on all the championship teams for LSN since LSN's been around like the last 3 years, you know, Lizards, Outlaws and Machine last year. You could do a reverse documentary on the Machine this year, and it would be just as compelling.
It would be so fascinating.
It's not even that it's the fall of a great team. We're going to get to some moves they're making too. It's just guys are – they haven't had the same roster once, and I don't think they're going to have the same roster for the rest of the year. That's nuts, and that's how you lose in the MLL. If you don't have a consistent base of, I'm going to say, like 12 guys that you always can count on to play and start and you know what you're getting out of them, you're going to lose. You're just not going to have a good season. I think it actually pretty much boils down to that. Obviously, you have to get matchups and guys have to score and guys have to not get hurt. But you, at the core of it, you need 12 guys that can play 14 games. You know, maybe you can get away with 10, but I just think that you need that. And we're seeing in real time with Ohio what happens when that's disrupted, especially when they leaned on it so hard last year. So hard, like move guys around and guys did stuff that they were asked to do and they delivered. And now, you know, some of the guys just aren't there anymore or they're hurt or they're not available. And I don't know. I just don't think that you can make excuses anymore. I think that it really just boils down to you didn't have enough guys, and you're just going to lose games. You know, I don't think that anyone else. You can work and you can bring in other guys, and sometimes you get lucky. Like we saw, the Cannons brought in some extra guys about 3 or 4 weeks in and worked them into the roster, and you know now one of them's hurt again, and we'll get into that. But they're at least kind of advancing, but Ohio, I don't see Ohio advancing to anything anymore. And like you said, they're not going to repeat, but I think they're playing against a team that might have a chance to get another championship in Denver here, and that's why they lost.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, hey, sometimes bad stuff happens.
Yeah, sometimes stuff's out of your control.
That's a problem.
I'm not making excuses. Yeah. Like, you still can't lose 7 games with all that talent, but We've hammered Ohio into the ground enough. Now our next game, the Boston Cannons 15, the New York Lizards 13. Chris, Boston is undefeated at Endicott Stadium. The Cannons locked in the D3 sweep. Unfortunately, they play the rest of their games at Harvard. This was a head-scratcher for New York. They seem to be wildly out of sync on offense, aside from Pinnell, and they also looked confused without Joe Fletcher. What did you see here?
Yeah, so first of all, like, a great game to watch, especially if you're a member of the Pinnell family. Like, six goals for Rob, and just, like I say, the most dominant individual on the field at any given second. Two goals to assist and the win for James. So that whole family goes home happy, I'd say. As far as the individual teams go, New York, just a, I guess, just a shocking sort of collapse, offensively speaking, with regard to what we'd seen in previous weeks from them. You know, you had the one, like I said, you had Rob Pinnell doing his thing, but a lot of their work was just kind of, it all seemed to be unassisted. You know, they had some goals that were set up, but most of it just seemed like it was a lot of lacrosse players playing lacrosse and not so much a team performance. It was like, oh, here you go. You take the ball. Now you go try and make something happen.
It had a very summer ball feel. Yeah. I agree with that. Yes.
Yeah, and it's crazy because, you know, they've just been just killing people with these, you know, 20-goal games, 18 goals. But this was all very much just kind of like, okay, let me do my thing, and then you do your thing. As far as Boston goes, impressive performance by the UVA alumni squad. I think that might be kind of the way Boston goes now, like the old-school Boston Cannon. Just bring in some Cavaliers, get them all coached up by Dom Starja, and roll them out there. I mean, just solid offensive performances. Zed Williams was all over the place. They were something I – like, one particular note I had from watching this game is Zed Williams had scored, I think, four goals, and New York's still running with a short stick on him, and he just loved it.
Yeah.
You know, Zed Williams took advantage of it left and right. Just solid performances by guys like Mark Cockerton. The team looked good, you know? It was a good-looking performance by Boston. Good for them.
Here's one thing. I'm going to go analyst for a second. How are you letting Mark Cockerton just shoot? Like, what are you doing? You know that that's all he does. You know that. You know that going into the game, this dude is a lefty, and he shoots. And he shoots from anywhere. He does not care. He will Steph Curry that shot. He does not care. If there's five guys in front of him, he will shoot the ball. He'll put it by their ankles. He'll put it over their heads. He can release the ball in so many different ways. But he doesn't carry.
Right.
I just, like, in the MLO, how do you not stop a guy like that by just sticking it doesn't even have to be a long pole, but a long pole is probably a good idea because at least then you can try and alter the shot. And rough him up a little bit, but how do you not just put a guy on him and play fives? Because it's not that he's going to create something. It's that if you leave him, he will score. Just flat out, dude's going to score, and he'll score from all over the place. And he did it in this game. I mean, you know, it's five goals, two assists. It's one of the things that drove me nuts watching the game is like, how are you letting this dude who shoots do the thing that he's the best at? You know, I think, and you saw a lot of the other thing you saw here in this game, I think, is that you saw New York played arrogantly. Like, you can say, you can spin it however you want, but they really, they jogged the ball up to set up the six. They jogged guys out of the box. You know, they didn't dodge and re-dodge with any sort of ferocity. And I think Boston picked up on that early and was like, yo, I don't think they're taking us seriously. We're just going to go as hard as we can. And I think that's what you saw happen throughout the game. And then Boston just took control. And New York was like, we're fine, we're fine. And then they were not fine. Not fine. You know, they let Boston kind of run and control the tempo a lot. And I don't think it was – you know, face-offs. I think Kelly definitely was frustrated with Baptiste, but eventually got the better of him. You know, he had more ground balls. He had more face-off wins by a very slim margin. But I think by and large, Baptiste really frustrated him he couldn't do what he wanted to do. And his wingers, like, couldn't get out and get out of trouble or get out of their own way. And Boston saw that, took advantage of it. And we saw, you know, the guy come out. You see guys like – games like this are when guys like Max Seabold, guys like Brody Merrill, they come out and they get theirs. You know, Seabold didn't really get any points in this game, but he opened up a lot of lanes with his shooting, right? Like he made someone come cover him because he's still dangerous when he shoots. But you saw guys get on the other team that were the Cannons on the Lizards. And the Lizards were kind of like, I will be fine. It was almost a casual performance in many ways. And I think that is dangerous because that's the Lizards team that has lost. The other Lizards team that scores 20 goals, they win every game. But this wasn't that team. You know, maybe they need the crowd. I don't know. There wasn't a huge crowd there, but it just seemed like a strange kind of game to me overall. What do you have any other thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think if you are the Lizards, this has to be a giant eye-opener after the past couple of weeks that, you know, oh, all right, he got punched in the mouth a little bit. Maybe this isn't going to be a walk into the postseason. But I'm glad you mentioned face-offs in particular, because I do agree. I think Kelly was frustrated. You know, I saw him go jogging off one time, kind of shaking out his wrist. Even Baptiste was losing the clamp consistently, but he was still fighting a lot.
Right.
And there was, when it was 10-10, there was this sequence of about a minute and a half. Kelly wins the clamp. And then he pulls it back and throws it over Drew Adams' head. Boston gets the ball and scores. You know, Baptiste wins it. Boston gets the ball and scores. Kelly wins it again. And there's a turnover after the faceoff. Cockerton picks it up and scores. That's like a minute and a half. You know, he wins two of the three faceoffs, but Boston never trails. You know, like the game's over essentially at that point.
Yeah.
They just had to. They had to tighten things up. They couldn't afford to make mistakes or to get sloppy. You know, Boston wouldn't let them do it.
I absolutely agree. So we're going into the standings recap. We'll do this kind of every other week to update you guys. In first place are the Dallas Rattlers at 8-2. Second place, Chesapeake Bayhawks at 6-2. Third place, the Denver Outlaws at 6-4. Fourth place is Charlotte Hounds at 6-4. So those are right now your playoff teams, and then kind of teams on the bubble. At the five spot, the New York Lizards at 4-5. At the sixth spot, the Florida Launch, 4-6. The seventh spot, the Atlanta Blaze at 3-6. The eighth spot, Boston Cannons at 3-6 after their last win against New York we just talked about. And down at the bottom are the Ohio Machine at 2-7. We're going to catch you guys up with some of the news that's happened in the MLL before we get to our other segments. Last week, we talked about Jeremy Sievert's requesting a release from the Outlaws because if you don't play in three straight games and you're a rostered player, so the LSAR, you can request to be released, and then you have to clear waivers. Sievert's cleared waivers. Part of the reason that Sievert's cleared waivers is because he is on the veteran maximum amount, which I'm not permitted to disclose. But it prevented a couple teams from trying to pick him up. What happened is Boston, this is difficult to explain, but the outcome is the same. Boston ended up picking him up and trading him. They signed him to a new contract that was less money per game. Traded him to Chesapeake for Shaq Stanwyck and a fourth round pick. And the reason they did that is because Will Sands was also put on IR for the rest of the season, unfortunately, for the Cannons. So he will not be in the All-Star game or playing for the Cannons the rest of the year. Chris, what do you make of this move?
Man, you know, so first of all, I mean, too bad about Will Sands. I thought he was a very effective contributor in that Boston offense. They kind of needed somebody to kind of work as the gears, keeping it all moving. I don't know what we're going to get out of Shaq Stanwyck. Haven't seen him playing against, you know, major league competition. So, you know, we'll see if he is a true replacement or if they have to go in another direction. As far as Sievert's goes, I think you can never have too many participants attempting to do what he does. You know what I mean? If you have somebody who is willing to and able to get down an alley and rip a couple shots, if you have people who can try, you know, there's no harm tossing them in the lineup. So if they can get, and also somebody who's a veteran, been around championship programs, you know, he might bring something that, you know, kind of a young sort of roster that Boston's kind of stringing together, you know, might really kind of galvanize around. The Chesapeake could actually galvanize around, you know, having missed the playoffs last year. So I think it is it's something that could really work out well for them, and it doesn't really seem like that big a risk, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I think that the like-for-like nature of Shaq Stanwyck for Will Sands is not as exact as Boston might want it to be.
Right.
But I don't think Sieverts fit in with that lineup. And I'm under the impression, talking to a couple of people, that Sieverts wants to play for a championship. So going to Chesapeake allows that. He's reunited with Caudill. People don't realize this because Sieverts was basically known as a outlaw for such a large portion of his career. But he played with Chesapeake and got his debut. He wasn't drafted. And Caudill is one of the guys that helped him get his debut with the Bayhawks. So didn't surprise me that he ended up there. Another trade that is far more surprising is the Ohio Machine traded midfielder Jake Bernhardt to the Lizards for a conditional second-round pick and swingman Ryan Walsh. Why do teams keep trading with the Lizards? Why?
I really don't know. I think that is the question whenever you see these. Because, I mean, the Lizards are not afraid to make moves. And, you know, in a situation like this, you know, why would they be? So, you know, they have Ryan Walsh, who they kind of pulled back, who they lost earlier in the year. They pulled him back, but they hadn't been playing him. So that doesn't matter to them. And, you know, conditional second-round pick, I don't know what kind of conditions they are, but, you know, if it's a second-round pick, then, you know, okay. I don't think Joe Spoelstra is in a position right now where he's that scared about hanging on to a draft pick next year. You know, he's ready to try to get in and win right now. And I mean, Jake Bernhardt is so good at so many different things. And one of the things that New York, especially having just watched this Boston game, one of the things they need some help on is short stick coverage. And so if they can drop Bernhardt in on the defensive side and just keep him out there, which is, you know, something we've seen Ohio do a lot when they had, you know, the depth on the roster to do it. I mean, he's dramatically going to improve that lineup.
Yeah, he's actually – so the Lizards lost Steve DiNapoli earlier in the season. Jake Bernhardt is the rich man Steve DiNapoli. He is the billionaire Steve DiNapoli. Like, that's – it's almost the perfect fit in, you know, replacing his need. And also because Bernhardt does more things, right? He scores more often. He's more, you know, cognizant of, you know, game situations. Now he's been a coach for a couple years at UVM. So this trade is crazy because it makes the Lizards so good. But I think we've seen that just because you have a lot of talent doesn't mean you're just automatically going to win the games. You still got to play them to win. So I don't know. I'm sure the rest of the league is like, New York, really? You had to trade him to New York? Like, why? No one likes that. They're the evil empire, man. Everyone knows that. Like, it's not that everyone hates the Lizards. They just hate to deal with them. You know, like,
right.
Clearly not with trades, but in other ways. They just hate dealing with them. Like, I don't want to deal with playing the Lizards tonight, but I guess we will. You know?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah,
it would be a dream for the other teams in the league to not have to deal with them in the postseason. You know what I mean? Like, you just, even if you beat them in the regular season, even if their record is mediocre, you don't want to run into Rabel and Pinnell and Walters and Manny on a good night. And it only takes one good night for your season to be over.
Yeah.
You know? So just keep them out of the playoffs if you're any other team. So, yeah, you're not at all thrilled to see that Jake Bernhardt is now going to be a New York Lizard.
No, I don't.
And they gave up, like, as far as their roster goes, they gave up literally nothing. So
nothing. Yeah.
Good for them.
I don't know. I'm still shaking my head about it. And I mean, it just recently happened, so it's a little fresh. The wound is a little fresh. It's still bleeding, but it's wild. And we definitely had to talk about it. Let's talk about something else that's happening this week. And that's the All-Star Game. I'm sure you guys already know that it's happening at Harvard Stadium at 7 p.m. But maybe what you didn't know,
yes.
What you didn't know is that it's going to air on ESPN2 on Thursday night at 7 p.m. What? Chris, you have to talk because I don't have any words left.
Yeah, okay, so let me ask you this. We are recording this Tuesday night, and if you're listening to it, you'll be listening to it sometime later, with my understanding of time and space. All-Star Game is Thursday, which is at best going to be one day away from people listening to this. So my question to you, when and how did you hear that the game was going to be on ESPN2?
I just saw that Quint tweeted it.
Yeah.
That's it. It's the only place I have
it. I did the same.
Yeah.
That's how I found out, too. I saw Quint tweeted it. That's the only way I know, because I follow Quint on Twitter. Now, what about anybody who doesn't follow Quint on Twitter?
Well, that's why we retweet it, Chris, because they follow us.
Well, that I understand that. That makes sense. So now if we retweet it, that helps the league get its message out. But as far as the league goes getting its message out, there's got to be some sort of plan or something. I feel like, do you think they told Quint to tell everybody?
No.
Or he heard about it?
I think he was probably involved in getting that to happen since he works for ESPN.
Right,
but
okay.
I think it's more of a Team USA deal than an MLL deal. Because they're playing Team USA, yeah. And Team USA is going to be on, you know, ESPN when they go to the world. So that makes sense. That's how it makes sense to me. If they weren't playing Team USA, there's no way this happens. So In that way, I'm not surprised they haven't announced it. They might just be waiting to announce it tomorrow. I don't know. I can't get inside the mind of anybody in that office. I've tried. I've been rebuffed. It's just, I don't know how to do it.
I just feel like this is a huge thing that should be treated quite hugely. And I don't think it's being treated in such a fashion yet.
I absolutely agree. Chris, I think we actually have someone on the line that can talk about the All-Star Game. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Florida Launch and newly minted All-Star Attackman, Dill Malloy. Dill Malloy, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Hey, guys. What's up?
Not much. We're just doing the podcast. Thanks for calling in and appearing with us. We're just going to do a quick interview with you. So I'm going to start first. I think it's an understatement to say you've had an explosive season so far. What is the secret for MLL players making the leap in year two of the MLL, if there is one?
If anything, you know, not coming off the college season, I would have to say, you know, is making sure you get into the wall in the gym, you know, on your own time, especially with some of us with, you know, full-time jobs. It's not always the easiest thing. But, you know, that passion for lacrosse, you know, it doesn't die away after college. So it's been pretty easy for myself, you know, to keep sticking my hand, you know, a break from the real world as it always has been. So I think that's just, you know, really important, you know, keeping that passion up and, you know, getting your reps in, really. You know, it is tough not coming out of an everyday practice, you know, right into a game. But, you know, I think we've been pretty successful in the Florida Launch. And, you know, that's because everyone – shares that, you know, common goal and wants to be there.
All right, so Dylan, I've got a two-part question for you. So athletes, you know, a lot of athletes get nicknames like Jay Will and A-Rod. Yours would be Demo. Does anybody call you Demo? And regardless of that, how do you feel about the nickname Demo? Because it would really help me with some Friday references I've been trying to incorporate into my writing.
I've never been called it. I'm not opposed to it if you can start it, but you have to be the bold one, you know, to put it out there and, you know, potentially get shut down by, you know, other people on Twitter and whatever else, you know. I wouldn't promote it myself, but, you know, if it catches on, I wouldn't be mad about it.
Yeah, I mean, we don't get shut. Chris doesn't get shut down. I'm the one that gets shut down on Twitter. So I think we'd be safe. All right, so I've always wanted to ask you this, but I've never got to, so I'm shooting my shot. Do you believe, as do I, that the 2016 Brown team would have won the NCAA championship if you were not hurt when you played against Hopkins?
I would like to think that, obviously. And deep down, yes, I do think that. You know, I think we were good enough to win it without me, but, you know, just – if that's what happens in lacrosse, unlucky bounce, you know, Maryland wins it, and unlucky injury, I'm done. So, I think with or without me, you know, we were right there. We had it. But, I would like to say if I was playing, you know, I would have been able to help a little bit more and hopefully would have won it.
And speaking of your college days, you sported a fairly iconic hairstyle back then that you have since traded in for basically what I call, you know, like the grown man cut. Was it sad to let it go, or was it something that you felt just kind of had to be done?
I was really sad. I mean, at the time, I had it for a long, long time. I mean, I grew that thing out from probably, I don't even know when I originally got mullet cut, my senior year. I think I got it probably cut in April, so I was growing it since, like, Thanksgiving. And then I didn't get it cut until, like, done for the real work life until, like, mid-July. So at the point, I was like, I grew this out for a long time. I'm sad to let it go, but I was ready to, you know, be a real person and, you know, clean it up. But it's been a joke lately at work. You know, I just got a haircut recently, and I was trying to get my boss to sign off on a mullet, you know. I was really craving it since the season's here, and it was at the point where, you know, I was starting to curl. And, you know, the flow was coming back, but I had to resist, you know, have responsibilities. Didn't know how it would go over, but I'm itching to get it back for sure.
All right, the end of the fun stuff. What stick do you use, and who strings it?
That's a twofold. So
yes,
in the MLL, I currently use the Maverick Optic. And Lars Keel strung that for me, who was an assistant coach at Brown my junior year, and, you know, now goes on and basically is a professional stringer and helps out with the Boston Cannons. And then outside of the MLL, where I am allowed to use what I want, you know, I use the Epic, you know, Integra head and all the Epic equipment and everything.
The prequel?
Yeah, the prequel and the Integra shaft, sorry. And, you know, all their equipment. So I give them a shout-out as my sponsor. You know, have great equipment and, you know, great sticks. You know, when I am going to use them, those are my first choice.
Nice. What is the last great movie you saw, and what is the worst movie you have recently seen?
I want to say Black Panther. You know, I get to watch a lot of movies on my flights these days, thankfully. You know, American lately hasn't had any TVs on the back of this on the seats. I was pretty pissed. But usually when I go Delta, I watch Black Panther. I thought it was freaking amazing. A bad movie I've seen recently, I don't even know. The last thing I can think of is, like, Sausage Party. I was pissed. I didn't love that one. But I don't know if I've watched that many movies besides, you know, the top ones on the flights. But, yeah, probably Sausage Party.
All right, another favorite question. Who is your favorite team sports athlete, and who is your favorite individual sports athlete?
This is really hard for, you know, someone that's not that well-rounded.
You're a New York guy. I'm sure it's like a New York team, right?
I don't even think so. I'm trying to think. I mean, you know, being an athlete my whole life, I was always kind of outside being the one playing. You know, I'd never die hard into any team. I just kind of, you know, observe. But, I mean, team sport, just because I was watching a lot of hockey recently, you know, Ovechkin's just an absolute savage. And, you know, I was just thinking really highly of him throughout the playoffs and whatnot, you know, just putting on for his team and his city. I thought he was sick. So I think recently Ovechkin has been, you know, just a hero recently. So I'm going to go with him. Individual, I'm not a big golf fan, really. So I'm going to go, I'm going to go with tennis. Serena Williams, she's also, you know, sick athlete.
Solid picks. Solid picks.
Absolutely. Last one for you, Dylan. Where can people follow you on social media? And finally, please recommend a song for our summer MLO playlist we're putting together.
All right. Social media, DMalloy4. Got a lot going on there. Definitely follow. You know, Instagram is basically, you know, the most popular social media around here. Maybe not to you guys, but, you know, to us players at least. We're not currently tweeting up storms anymore, so DMalloy4 on Instagram. And I would say for a summer mix, I would have to go with House Party with Sam Hunt. You know, it's a nice little throwback.
Okay. All right. That's it. Dylan, thanks for joining us on short notice on the drive back from work. Really appreciate it. And, you know, good luck for the rest of the season and in the All-Star game.
Yeah, no worries, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot.
So I think Dylan Lloyd just made fun of us for being old guys on Twitter. Did that just happen?
I definitely feel like that might be where he was going with that.
I mean, he's not wrong, but like, we have Instagrams. We're on the gram, right?
Yeah, he's not wrong, but it just kind of hurts to hear.
Yeah, it was a little hurtful. We're going to get back into kind of the topics we were talking about. And one of the things that Chris and I have done the last couple of years is an All-Star game draft. It's a lot of GIFs. It's a lot of YouTube clips of our favorite movies. Like, we're explaining why the players are great. We're picking our players. We're drafting them. We're talking trash. RIP the All-Star draft. We are not doing that this year, mostly because it's against Team USA, but also because I think it's time to switch it up a little bit. And we collabed on an idea, but it's mostly Chris. So I'll let Chris give you the one sentence, two sentence explainer.
So here's what I'll say. Keep your eyes open. Keep your ears to the street. Coming soon. Come out to play.
Wow. Okay. That was more vague than I thought, but still watch for our piece, either late Wednesday or early Thursday, right before the All-Star game. Maybe you can read it on the way. You're getting a ride. Definitely check that out. It'll be a nice, fun read. We're going to move on to our recommendation of the week. I'm going to go first, and I'm going to talk about a book. So if you don't like books, I guess like skip 30 seconds ahead. I understand. Reading is not for everyone. And the book is Sea of Rust. It's actually a book I've been saving for a couple months, just because I wanted to get out of the NCAA season before I dug into it. It's appropriately nerdy, post-apocalyptic robot sci-fi set after the humans are all eliminated by a robot uprising, tells the story of how that happened. And the other through narrative is a scavenger robot who kind of is funny and sarcastic, but also pretty effective in the way that they tell their story. It's written by C. Robert Cargill, who also wrote the Doctor Strange movie and the movie Sinister. And he's also on one of my favorite podcasts called Junk Food Cinema. So shout to Sea of Rust if you like weird and funny sci-fi. Check it out. Chris, what's your recommendation of the week?
I'm going to go with a movie I caught this weekend on HBO. American Made, Tom Cruise movie, came out last year, and I missed it when it came out, and a lot of people did as well. It was moderate success, definitely not like, you know, Tom Cruise level hit, but, you know, it did all right for itself, so maybe you missed it. It's based on the true story of a guy named Barry Seal, who was like this regular Joe airplane pilot guy for TWA, but then he gets hired by the CIA to start, you know, taking photos of all these, you know, Central American hideouts and doing all these crazy drops and things like that. And that kind of spirals into other things. And it is a crazy true story. And I love true stories that are also kind of insane, like, you know, like Blow or something like Goodfellas or even like American Gangster or things like that. It's just kind of people who have lives that somehow or another, probably something illegal, get way more wealth than they ever possibly imagined securing. So I enjoyed it. And it's a little bit of history lesson, obviously, I'm sure added to make a dramatic effect as well, but something cool to learn about. And it's Tom Cruise in it up. So if you didn't see it, check it out.
We all know that I also am a huge Tom Cruise fan. So I will definitely check that out. Thank you for reminding me that that's on HBO. I'm going to put it on as soon as the podcast is over. We're going to move on to the weekend preview. It's kind of a short weekend, but we're going to go all the way through to the July 4th games. Not previewing the All-Star game because that's what our article is for. So starting first, Saturday, June 30th at 7 p.m., the New York Lizards will take on the Ohio Machine. The Lizards can actually eliminate the Machine from the playoffs with a win here, and they will be happy to do so. They also really need this victory after last week's home loss to or the loss to Boston at Endicott. Chris, how do you see this one playing out?
So I got to say, Ohio has a history of standing up to the Lizards and smacking them around in years past. You know, even when the Lizards were at their hottest, Ohio has always kind of risen to that occasion. So I'm not going to rule them out. There's a lot of question marks in the Ohio lineup. And, you know, we really don't know what they're going to have on the field, especially the way the season's been going after last week. But if you're going to get up for something and it's not looking like you're going to repeat, keeping the Lizards out is something that Ohio should definitely be able to rally behind. And having no Fletcher for the Lizards is going to be a very huge test for that defense. Very bad news for them. So they've got a shot.
And they're also facing their former teammate, Jake Bernhardt, who was a key player in the championship last year, just traded to the Lizards, as we mentioned earlier in the podcast. Next matchup, the Charlotte Hounds versus the Atlanta Blaze, Saturday, June 30th at 7:30 p.m., I actually think the Charlotte and Atlanta games have been really fun the last few years. You know, two teams that match up well, have similar approaches to the MLO game. I'm looking forward to this because both teams are kind of like staggering, like they got off a roller coaster right now in the MLO season. They're like, oh, we're doing good. Oh, I don't know. Oh, I shouldn't have read this for the third time. Oh, I don't know. I think they're both there. They're both in that headspace, even though Charlotte's at 6-4 and Atlanta's at 3-6. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, this is a really fun matchup. I think that's a great way to describe it. A lot of individual stars who are kind of like the Spider-Man pointing at each other. Then it's going to make for another interesting matchup between them. Battle of Connors. You're going to see Connor Kelly and Fields going at it again, they just did. You know, this past season, it's a big deal them playing Maryland Albany. Get to see those guys again. I want to see Michael Earhart and Scott Ratliff on the same field, just basically crossing midfield and chucking up some goals, perhaps. Michael Earhart last game had a bunch of opportunities, and it looked like he was more interested in getting other people involved. So I hope that's all out of his system, and I want to see a bunch of two-point attempts for both of them.
Yeah, and Gittleman led up 2 two-pointers last week, so it's definitely something that's on their mind. All right, our next game is on Monday, July 2nd at 6 p.m., and it's the Chesapeake Bay Hawks versus the Boston Cannons. Monday makes this super weird. I think this game's – it's just weird to play and watch an MLO game on a Monday. But it's probably going to be the debut for Jeremy Sieverts on the Bayhawks. So for me, it's can't-miss streaming internet athletics. What do you think?
Absolutely. I also am going to proclaim this game the start of Lyle Watch 2018. He was at first designated to return, quote, sometime in July. So that was, you know, when he was actually done with NLL but working on an injury. The report coming out of Bayhawks camp was he should be here in July. Monday is July, so he'll be there then. Who knows? but start the countdown just in case he shows up. Looking forward to the face-off matchup in this one. Another big test for Trevor Baptiste. Could be a good game. I feel like Chesapeake hasn't played in forever, but we'll see.
Yeah, for sure. And I think Baptiste is definitely the key player here. The final game that we're going to preview for you guys is maybe one of the most important games in the MLL season, regular season, besides the playoffs. And that's the Denver Outlaws versus the Boston Cannons on July 4th at 9 p.m. Eastern. The Outlaws. The Boston's more of an outhouse when they play the Outlaws. The Outlaws are a powerhouse on the 4th. This game, I think, has the potential to level out the gouging that the MLL attendance has been experiencing. It's down as low as 30% for some teams. So I'm going to say if you live in the Denver area, you have got to go see this. Chris, how do you see this matchup going down?
It is, first of all, it's very fortunate that the Outlaws are usually so good. So they haven't been referred to as the Denver Outhouse. Because now that I know, it is just sitting there.
Patent pending.
I don't know, man. It's going to be, look, I mean, these guys are a juggernaut. And we don't know if Boston last week was, I mean, you know what, like, ask me on the 3rd. We'll see what they do after the Chesapeake game. But, you know, we'll see what they really have. If they can string together some wins, or if this was just kind of a one-off and they kind of jumped up. And, you know, boxed a bunch above their class to take down the Wizards. Two games in that short a time span and one where they go out to Denver seems like a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
But we'll see. You know, hopefully they can put something together. At least give all the fans something. This is a huge game always.
I mean, if they win both, they're 5-6. If they lose both, they're 3-8 and they're out of the playoffs. So right. We talk about must-win games. I think both games are must-win games, and there's very short notice for them to pull both of those off. I absolutely agree with that. So we are going to conclude, as we conclude every show, with the MVP of the week. Chris, tell me who your MVP is this week.
This week, the MVP for me is Hall of Fame. I assume he's already there. Hall of Fame wide receiver for the 49ers and the Raiders to a much lesser degree, Jerry Rice. Jerry Rice is the MVP because he is 56 years old, if I have that correctly, and was invited to participate in the annual ESPN body issue, where if you're not familiar, it's just athletes getting naked and taking pictures and showing off their bodies. And as somebody who is 56 years old, you know, congratulations on being brave enough and confident enough. As somebody who was an athlete, you know, say, you know, yeah, hey, I'm 56, but I can still rock a nude photo shoot if need be. He also followed this up by declaring that he feels like he could still play in the NFL today. Like, that is the kind of shape he believes he is currently in. That strikes me as insane, and I feel like he would change his mind after getting hit once or twice. But the notion that he feels like he could still do it is something anyone who is washed or approaching washed status or recently achieved washed status, playing any sort of adult leagues or something like that, can wholeheartedly embrace. And we should all hope to have the mentality, Jerry Rice, that we can still do it like we could. So that's why Jerry Rice is my MVP.
You know, this is one of those serendipitous moments where I'm glad we don't discuss the MVPs, because my MVP is very much in the vein of that whole concept of being washed but not feeling washed. And my MVP is my massage therapist, Victoria, who destroyed me last week. And then I got up the next day and felt like I was 20. And I played at a men's league game and I was no longer washed. I was unwashed by one session. So if you got $100 and you're hurting and you're an old dude, but you keep in shape, hit that massage therapist, man. Also, I taught her how to do a podcast in a way easier format than we do it. So shout to Vicky at Bedford Chiropractic. Appreciate you. Thanks. She's probably not listening, but maybe she will. I'll probably tell her to listen. She will. All right. That is it for another wild and weird MLL podcast going into the All-Star break. And speaking of wild and weird, make sure to check out Chris and I's piece going up before the All-Star game later this week. Can't miss. Going to be fun. Always great to collab with CR22 anytime I get a chance to, not just on the podcast, but with our writing. So I can't wait to get after it, and I can't wait for you guys to read it. And thank you for listening. We appreciate you.